you experiencing technical difficulties?
That electrician must be a Democrat.
No technical difficulties here. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Thursday, and a real pleasure. Welcome Virginia Allen, who's a reporter at the Daily Signal. Virginia, I was just extolling my audience of the idea that I don't see a way to sensibly have foreign national students from one country in particular, China, come to America, study at American universities, give them access to all kinds of information, and then allow them to go back and report to their communist masters in Beijing. I've tried 100 ways to think, okay, we could do this. No, that won't work. And I've run out of ideas. Do you have one for one way that the Chinese nationals could come here and they wouldn't steal us blind?
Well, I think we would need a new regime in China, quite frankly. I think that's really what needs to
change. Can we give them the Democrat Party? They're welcome to it, and they're already halfway to socialism anyway.
They are. I mean, they're already halfway there. We'll just ship the Democrats over there. I'm sure they'll be very happy joining the CCP. But, I mean, look, this is, I think, a really interesting situation. And in some ways, it's a sad case because there's obviously Chinese students that want to come to study in America, that want to get away from the CCP. But yet, even among those students that have no interest in reporting back to the CCP and sharing information, we know from investigations, including a brilliant student-led investigation at Stanford University, that these students don't have a choice. And when they're coming from China, they're subject to the Chinese Communist Party. And of course, you know, these are young people for their own safety, the safety of their families. They feel like they have to share, you know, any information that maybe they're collecting or gathering, or if they're commissioned specifically to report on certain issues. So when it comes to actually being serious about protecting America from the Chinese Communist Party, the Trump administration is making a hard decision here. It's a hard call, but I think it's a no-brainer at the end of the day that if you have essentially spies on your campuses, you got to get them off campus.
Well, and when you have the phenomena that I've been told, I'm not the expert on it, but they say some of these students are actually being overseen by minders. You know, I mean, I went to the old Soviet Union, not to, when it was the Soviet Union, but when it was the CIS, which was sort of in between the end of the USSR and the beginning of what is modern day Russia. And I was there following a charity mission, you know, as a reporter. And so I was only there a week. But we had minders who kind of kept an eye on us. And I understand that in a communist country, but we're allowing some of these communist minders to mind the business of Chinese students on American soil, which seems like something that is completely intolerable, and yet America has tolerated it.
Well, and I think Americans have tolerated it because it has sounded almost crazy, right? It's like, really? Like the Chinese Communist Party, they're really checking in on their students? But no, this is proven, and I'll hearken back to this report that was written by the Stanford Review. In that report, they write...
Great conservative paper, by the way, Virginia. I know some of the writers, they're great. I mean, right there in the middle of Big Blue Stanford, a little red newspaper, and it's great.
Exactly. They are doing great work, but you know, they explain that China experts speaking anonymously to them confirmed that it requires students to regularly submit situation reports to Chinese diplomatic missions about their research. So, I mean, they're literally required to be, you know, putting in writing, hey, you know, these are situations I'm seeing, or whatever information it might be. And then you have the fact that there are, you know, members of the Chinese Communist Party that are specifically preying on students at these big universities that are not Chinese, but maybe they're studying, you know, Asian studies, or they're studying Chinese politics. And so there's a really targeted effort on behalf of the Chinese Communist Party to, you know, learn information about America. And the question is, why? Well, it all comes down to power and the development of technology. I mean, make no mistake, in many ways, we are in a bit of a Cold War with China, where that question of, you know, who will be the next great world power, China is emphatically answering that will be us, and it's up to the United States to stay on the cutting edge of AI technology, cryptocurrency, on all of these avenues that really are the future. And so much of that technology and expertise and skills, that's being developed on our university campuses. And so that's why China, I think, is so locked in specifically on young people and on what's happening across American universities.
Well, and one of the concerns I've got, because then I thought, like you said, well, but some of them want to come here and stay. Except that's problematic, too, because, and tell me if you think there's a flaw in this logic, you come here, you study at Stanford or Yale or MIT, and then, you know, oh, I want to stay. Okay, we'll give you a work permit. You can stay and work for a high-tech company. You stay 5 years, maybe even 10 years, because China plays the long game. And you work at one of these high-tech companies, and you soak up like a sponge everything you can get, and they're thinking you've got a successful career here in America, except all you are is a spy who's moved from the university to one of the tech companies, so you can really soak up the good stuff. And since America never tells people you can't leave, I don't want us to be the kind of country that locks people in like the old East Germany, you know, or the Soviet Union. When that Chinese national kid says, you know what, I'm going back to China and I'm going to be a hero of the People's Republic of China because I'm going to bring home all the technology I got from the university and from my time at XYZ high tech company.
Well, I think that's certainly a concern. And it's one that I think, you know, there, you know, as you mentioned at the beginning, it's like, what is the solution to this? How can we still have, you know, young, eager Chinese minds coming to the U.S. to learn? I think that there probably is a way through, you know, really intense vetting, and, you know, there might be a way to have enough background checks and security checks, maybe. But I think one of the reasons why this move could be for the United States, an effort. You mentioned China playing the long game. China's excellent at this. The United States can really improve on this. But I think that Trump's effort here, and in saying we're ending these visas for Chinese students, this could be a small move in the U.S. playing the long game of really diminishing trust among the Chinese of the Chinese Communist Party. That if you have parents who dreamed of their child coming to study in the United States, and now all of a sudden, because of the action of the Chinese Communist Party, that child can't come to the United States. That undermines the government of China, that could, not quickly, this would not be fast, but could over time erode that support and could lead to a regime change in China. Again, that is long game. We are nowhere near that, but it could be a little crack in the wall, if you will.
I just worry because, Virginia, I've had my audience say, well, why are we giving Harvard $500 million, $600 million? I said, because officially we're paying them to do research. But think about the kind of research that a lot of them may be legitimately doing. Scientific research, biological research, military research. Oh, and all those friendly little grad students from China are right there watching all that research being done and feeding it all back to communist China. That is Virginia Allen. She's a reporter for the Daily Signal. Virginia, it's a pleasure to have you on the program. Hey, this just in, Planned Parenthood CEO compensation, the organization that kills nearly 500,000 babies every year, paid its CEO almost $1 million last year. And to make even more disgusted, they used our tax dollars to make it happen. Planned Parenthood is big business in abortion, profiting off killing babies. We have to stop Planned Parenthood, and I have the team to make it happen. Join me in supporting Americans United for Life. Since their beginnings in 1970, AOL has been involved in every pro-life case presented before the Supreme Court. Their top-tier lawyers are dedicated to defending life and protecting the unborn. AOL played a critical role in the legal strategy that overturned Roe, and now they're focused on exposing Planned Parenthood and closing abortion centers permanently. Americans United for Life has helped save more than 3 million children, and they're leading the charge in the post-Roe era. I'm looking for 50 pro-life listeners to donate $50 a month to stop the madness. Your tax-deductible donation saves the lives of babies and advances pro-life legislation. Your help is critical. Donate securely at aul.org/Lars. That's aul.org/Lars. Glad to have you with me. If you want to join the conversation, it's 866-439-5277, and you're listening to the Lars
Larson Show. everyone's favorite color is gold.
I can proudly proclaim that the golden age of America is upon us.
Sit back and enjoy. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. I'm kind of concerned that Republicans are going to cave in on that SALT issue. That's the state and local tax issue. SALT was gigantically reduced in the 2017 tax cuts. I think it should stay reduced. And if you say, well, Lars, that's probably because you benefit from it. No, actually getting rid of most of the SALT deductions and putting a limit on it was something that cost me money. But the fact is, I was in favor of doing it because it made sense. It did not make sense that people who live in low tax states would be paying the bill for the people who live in high tax states like California, like New York and places like that. Well, now it appears that maybe some of the Republicans are going to cave in on this issue and vote to quadruple the tax on state and local tax deductions from $10,000 to about $40,000. It would mostly benefit very, very wealthy people in this country, and I'm not in favor. Let's go first to Delmer. Hey, Delmer, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Well, Lars, you know, as far as the budget is concerned, I mean, we have spent 4 years throwing money at everything except trying to help America. And now Trump is in a situation that we are restoring America, and it's going to cost money. I mean, you've been a landlord, and, you know, if you had a house 4 years that was destroyed and you would have to rebuild it, it would go way beyond the budget that would be allowed for it. And that's, I don't know if that's a good scenario or not.
I don't know if that's a good metaphor, because let me ask you this, Delmer. Right now, the federal government consumes about a quarter of the GDP. Now, the federal government is supposed to have a limited set of jobs, the so-called enumerated powers. I think they go far beyond what the and what the founders meant by that was they said, okay, most of the liberties are going to go to the citizens of this country. Some responsibilities will be put in the hands of the states, the 50 states now, 13 back then. And the federal government will have this in this very short list of things it's supposed to do, primarily safeguarding the safety and security of the country. And yet the federal government has grown to be 2 million employees with this gigantic budget that is spending us into the poorhouse. We don't need to make it bigger. We need to make it smaller. Now, are there some things that need to be corrected? Yeah, we need to spend the money that goes to the Pentagon a lot smarter. And maybe to get us back to a proper sized Navy and that sort of thing in a defense of the country. But I would rather find that money within the existing budget and not grow the budget. And yet this current Republican budget doesn't seem to do that. It seems to get much bigger, maybe not as much bigger as it would be under Democrat leadership, but it's still getting bigger. And you're suggesting, well, you know, we got to fix the country. Most of the fix for the country, Delmer, is not going to come from the government. You know, growing the economy, that's the private sector. Working hard, that's individual Americans. What is it we need to have the government do that they don't overdo for us right now?
Well, what I'm hoping, Lars, is the federal government's a monster.
I agree.
It's an uncontrolled monster, but hopefully, step by step, maybe what you just said, we can start cutting back on this federal, because that's where we're really getting injured, is the federal government. That is killing us. So.
Yeah, and that's all I'm saying, because my favorite question to ask for any ask of anyone running for public office, they could be running for city council, they could run for county commission, they could run for the state legislature, or they could run for the U.S. Congress. My favorite question is, what are some things that the government you're running for to, you know, be part of the decision making of, what do they do now that they don't need to be doing? Well, I could give you a list of federal agencies that I'd get rid of 10 seconds from now. You know, I'd get rid of the Department of Education. I'd get rid of the Commerce Department. I'd get rid of most of the Energy Department, except the part that keeps our nuclear weapons fresh. I mean, there are lots and lots of things that the federal government does that it doesn't need to be doing. And there are things the federal government does that it could do at either a break even or even at a point where they'd bring in more revenue than they used to. And for example, in the USDA, there is the Forest Service. The Forest Service manages the nation's forests. Number one, I don't think the federal government should own 200 million or 188 million acres of forest. And if you owned an asset of 188 million acres of forest, Delmer, wouldn't you have to work really hard to lose money on that? I mean, if tomorrow your favorite uncle left Delmer 10,000 acres of forest, and you went to your friends and said, "Ah, they left me 10,000 acres of trees. I'm going to be losing money hand over fist." Your friends would say, "Delmer, are you crazy? 10,000 acres of forest? You're going to be rich for the rest of your life. You're never going to have to worry about a paycheck ever again." You go, "No, no, I'm following the Forest Service plan," where the Forest Service mismanages 188 million acres of forest and manages to lose money with that kind of asset. It makes no sense. We should be making money like crazy. And if you say, "Well, what should the federal government do with the money it makes on the Forest Service?" Pay for the things we need to have, not the have-to-haves, the nice-to-haves, but the have-to-haves, with some of the money you generate from tariffs, from the forests, from taking oil and ground, oil and natural gas and minerals out of the ground. But thanks for the call. Let's go to Daryl. Daryl, thanks for the call from California. What's on your mind?
Hey, so I wanted to give you a conspiracy theory.
Sure.
I was watching a show the other day, and one of the people on the show was a handwriting expert, and he was looking at the signature of the auto pen, and he was looking at signatures that Joe Biden had signed, things that he had signed while he was vice president. And the signature on the auto pen and the signature when he was vice president didn't match. The J and the B didn't match. But the J and the B did match Jill Biden's signature.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Has anybody ever looked into the fact that the signature on the auto pen may have even been forged?
Boy, that's really an interesting theory. And Daryl, the other one, you know, that goes along with that is when people have said to me, "Well, what if we could prove that things were signed on behalf of Joe Biden that Joe Biden had no idea were being signed?" You know, for you and me, if you walked in and they said, "Hey, Daryl, you owe us for that loan you took out." "What loan?" And the bank shows you a piece of paper and you say, "That's not my signature." If you can prove that, and they say, "Well, we loaned somebody money on your signature, so you owe us the money back." You say, "It's not my signature. I don't owe you a dime." Well, if Joe Biden's name, his signature, was put on things that he never knew about and never said yes to, the president has the power to do all kinds of things, like pardons, like executive orders, like signing bills. If his signature was affixed to things that he never knew about, then maybe we should wipe those things off the books and say they don't exist because Joe Biden never signed it. And if it was Jill Biden, that's even worse. And in fact, I would think that she'd be committing a crime, wouldn't she, by signing her name to something that was not her? I'd call that at the very least fraud. Hey, if something were to happen tomorrow, are you ready for it? Say a new virus, maybe a shortage or a supply chain collapse. Whatever it is, your health can't wait. And that's why I want to tell you about All Family Pharmacy. It's a pharmacy that puts you first. They're on a mission to make America healthy again by helping families just like yours stay stocked up and ready with the medications you need close at hand. They're not just selling medication. They're standing up for medical freedom and making sure Americans have access to the treatments they choose. While others block access, All Family Pharmacy makes it available. They've got ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, methylene blue, mebendazole, antibiotics, even your everyday meds. 200 medications available. And it's easy. No insurance, no hassle. Go online, work with a licensed doctor. That gets the prescription, the meds shipped right to your door. Go to allfamilypharmacy.com/Lars and use code Lars10 for 10% off. That's allfamilypharmacy.com/Lars and use code Lars10 and take control of your health. President of Less Government. See, I want to talk about Elon Musk, but you know what just crossed my email today, or just minutes ago, is Politico, which is usually, you know, interesting to read, if nothing else.
I call it Pathetico. Go ahead.
Let me tell you how pathetic. When you make a gigantic mistake in the second sentence of a story that they chose to flush out as tonight's nightly update. In the beginning, the future looked bright for Elon Musk. The world's richest man barreled into Washington, fresh off a decisive win for President Trump, on whose campaign he had spent almost $300 billion.
Oops.
Do you think they meant $300 million?
Yeah, because I wrote about that on Monday. It was a little over $290 million is what I think. And it wasn't just on his presidency. It was on all the Republicans.
Right.
So they got it wrong twice. They got the amount wrong, and they got the targets wrong.
I'm sure plenty of people will be emailing. Let's see, who wrote this? Irie Center. Center?
What? Is it just one? Because the trend now is to have nine authors on a 800-word article.
I've seen that, and I figure they're trying to all avoid responsibility. I didn't write. I co-authored that with eight other people, so they wrote most.
It's Larry Moe and Curly all pointing at each other.
Well, tell me this, though. What, as they put it, broke Musk? You know, Musk has left, and on his way out the door, he's saying things like, look, I guess we're just going to have to grow the GDP. And I thought of this, you know, the metaphor would be if I sat down with a friend who was constantly spending more money than he made or she made, and I realize I'm not going to be able to get him to stop his profligate ways. So I say, well, if you're not going to spend within your means, you just have to make more money. So you need to take on a second job or get some more overtime or something, because that's the only way you're going to pay your bills.
The problem is they don't earn money; they take money. That's the big difference.
Yeah,
and you know, it's funny. I, not to pat myself on the back too hard, but I wrote that article on Monday about the rapidity with which Elon Musk achieved total disgust with DC, and then on Wednesday he comes out and I mean it was like I sat down for an interview with him, which I doubt he'd do because he doesn't like me because I used to write about how he was a big welfare queen,
but he
still is. And so, remember I said at the beginning, Doge will have no respect for me unless they get rid of all fake energy subsidies, because that's his business model. Anyway, but the fact of the matter is, I wrote in the article that I said this is going to be fascinating to watch, because he's obviously a very bright guy. It's going to be interesting to see how quickly he realizes DC's finished. And it took about a year. It was about a year from the time he, you know, hey, I'm endorsing Trump. Because you got the vibe from the guy that he really didn't pay attention himself to politics at all, in D.C. at all, from a political standpoint. And so he wades in, you know, Joe Rogan's show, I think, was the birth of it, if not close to the birth of it. And within a year, he's leaving in disgust and saying, we can't get the government to stop spending. So we're going to have to come up with some phantasmagorical way to increase GDP. You know, meanwhile, and that's the other thing he doesn't understand, because again, he's looking at it through the private sector prism. It gets increasingly harder to grow the GDP when the government is borrowing and taking up more and more of the private capital.
Yeah, the capital is gone
to grow the
GDP. And then, of course, you've loaded on all these regulations, that a lot of which, and this is mimicked at the local level as well, state, county, city, all across America, they've got insane levels of regulation. Even supposedly red states like Texas have done it because One of the guys we call on when there are real estate issues, he pointed out that San Antonio, you'd expect a conservative city. No, they weren't, because until they got into trouble on housing, and when they finally decided, let's chop back a whole bunch of these regulations, do you know they not only had house prices not rise anymore, they actually dropped about 15% to 20%. And you say, how'd they do that? They say, increased supply. I mean, it's supply demand. It's Econ 101. And you even San Antonio had a stupid level of regulation.
Well, I lived in very conservative Collier County, Texas, in a little fishing village just south of Naples. My house got flooded and destroyed by Hurricane Irma. I conservatively estimate I wasted $100,000 on the build of my new house on government regulations that made no building sense but were required by the allegedly conservative county in Collier. And this happens, you know, Florida has, you know, Texas has no income tax. Great, but my 50-year-old fixer-upper had an $8,000-a-year property tax. You know, it's just a matter of which pocket they pick. You know, hey, your income pocket's fine, but we're going to just completely extract from your property tax and the sales tax in Texas. If I remember, it's between 6% and 8%.
Yep.
So, you know, they just shift it around. And, you know, not to get sidetracked, but this is why I went to Belize. I said, yes, the government's corrupt, but it's tiny, and we don't have 50 state governments, and we don't have 2,000 county governments, and we don't have 5,000 city governments down here. So it's not just the feds. It's, you know, Trump says he wants to end property taxes, which he can't do because it's all local.
Yep.
But he's right on the sentiment, but he's wrong on the basic execution. But yeah, it's just, there's so much tax and regulation. And, you know, I wrote in my article, you know, Musk is undercovers hundreds, tens if not hundreds of billions of annual waste, fraud, and abuse. Then he watches Congress futz around for months because we have to codify this in law or none of it matters because the next Biden comes in and reverses everything.
Yep.
And he watches Congress futz around for months. You know, Trump's written 200 executive orders. Congress has passed five laws and probably four of them are post office renamings. And so he watches Congress futz around for months. Then they pass a bill that has zero DOGE cuts in it.
Yep.
And then he sees Trump yelling at the one person who opposes it in the House, Tom Massie, who's correct. And Trump, and Musk goes, what the hell am I doing here? Get me out of here. Why am I wasting my time and effort and money? You know, he's back to being Hank Reardon from Atlas Shrugged. I want to make my medal and make money, and that's it. Leave me alone.
And you know what? The very fact that they're about to pass the big, beautiful bill, keeping the tax cuts is a good idea, but spending all that money is not a great idea. And if they want to have, you know, if we got to get a bigger Navy, great, get a bigger Navy, but put it on the backs of saving money somewhere else in the government and hold, if we could hold the federal budget where it is for 5 years and just tell every department, we'd like to get rid of a lot of you, but in the meantime, every year you get the same dollar amount you got for the last 5 years, figure out how to live within that budget. And if you can't do it, then we're going to fire you and find somebody who can. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by, playback.
And now,
Lars. Real Red Meat Radio.
I mean, that's a special kind of stupid.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly, provocative talk radio.
What I say is what I say. And honestly, if you don't like it, I'm sorry.
Lars.
Oh, boys, I'm back.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
No, here's your host.
Wait a minute, I'm talking now, if you don't mind, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. If you want to join what we call the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, you disagree with something you heard on the show, we're glad to put you first in line at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you can vote in our poll on X. The poll on X is the daily poll question we put up. I'm just going to put it bluntly. Should America send all Chinese national students back home? U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio announced yesterday that the U.S. will start, and hit, this is the word he used, aggressively revoking the visas of Chinese students, including those with connections to the Chinese Communist Party or studying in critical fields. Well, are there any Chinese nationals who get permission to come to the United States to go to college who are not having connections to the Chinese Communist Party, ones that are expected to come here, study, soak up information, and regurgitate it for their Chinese Communist masters in Beijing? I think that applies to virtually all of them. And I've thought this problem through as much as I possibly can. You know, how do you have foreign national students come to the United States from China who need the permission of the Chinese government to come here? And who are told by the Chinese government it is your obligation as a Chinese national to report to the government any and all information that the government would find useful. And what kind of useful information might they encounter? Well, let's say you're a grad student studying at one of the major universities, MIT, could be Harvard, maybe it's Stanford in Silicon Valley. And you say, wow, I'm going to run into all kinds of good information. And just in case you decide not to report it back home, there's a Chinese minder here in the United States, keeping an eye on you and making sure that you don't step out of line. So, should America send all Chinese national students back home? And if you tell me, but Lars, what if some of them want to stay here and work in our technology industries? As long as they're able to return back to China, if they come here and get an advanced degree and soak up all that information at that American university and then go to work in the technology field, tell me what kind of Chinese mole that makes inside of our technology field. And does China have a history of stealing intellectual property from the United States and from United States companies? At that point, how can you welcome any of those nationals to be here in the United States studying in our universities, paid for, those universities are, by, in most cases, American tax dollars. Not the private schools, but the public schools, certainly. The Poll on X can be found at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens. AMAC has the conservative values I believe in, so I joined about a decade ago. You can join, too. Just go to amac.us or call 888-262-2006. AMAC's better. Better for you and better for America. A shout out to our friends in Heidelberg, Mississippi, listening on the Super Talk Network and WLAU. That's FM 99.3, where you can hear great talk radio all day long and catch my show Monday through Friday. I want to share something with you. Americans who value their Second Amendment rights, and I'm one of them, for use, number one, against threats of government tyranny. But we also like to point out on a fairly regular basis the practical day-to-day value of keeping and bearing arms. Famously, the only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy or gal with a gun. Well, that literally played out last night, less than 24 hours ago, in downtown Seattle, and it saved lives. There were three people who got into an argument outside, believe it or not, the Four Seasons Hotel. One man pulled a gun and shot two teenagers. That's when a bystander who was not involved in the dispute pulled his own legally concealed carry pistol and shot the assailant dead. The teen victims had serious injuries, but by all accounts, they're going to get better. The bad guy died. All in all, the best result you could possibly expect under the circumstances. And the good guy with a gun is cooperating with the police. I hope he gets a pat on the back. And if he needs a GoFundMe for his legal costs, I'll contribute. But frankly, I don't expect to see him face any kind of charges at all. He shot to defend the lives of those two teenagers. The bad guy is dead. That is a good thing. By the way, for those of you who think the guy with the gun should have waited for the police, in this case, the police got there very, very fast. They arrived within 2 minutes of the call. Now, that is response time. But they still got there after the threat had already been eliminated. And I've heard this 1,000 times as well. When minutes or seconds count, the police are usually only minutes away. Now, that's not a slam on the police. It's reality. You can't have police response of 30 seconds unless you happen to have a crime committed right in front of the police station. A study by Dr. John Lott at the Crime Prevention Research Center of what the FBI calls defensive gun uses points out, quote, the FBI tracks active shooting cases where individuals attempt to kill people in public places, including those tied to robberies or gang violence. Excluding those tied to robberies or gang violence. This study is the first to systemically compare how uniformed police and civilians with concealed handgun permits perform in stopping those attacks. Civilians with permits stop the attacks more frequently and face a lower risk of being killed or injured than police officers do. Remember stories like that. The next time one of your liberal gun-grabbing friends or co-workers tries to tell you that we'd all be safer if only we'd disarm more law-abiding people. By the numbers, about 94% of shootings happen in gun-free zones. If you're ever around a gun-free zone, be careful. They're one of the most dangerous places you could ever be. By the way, I want to update you on a couple of other things as well. MIT has now shut down its diversity, equity, and inclusion office. That because they're looking at the possibility that Donald Trump is going to come after them right after he's done with Harvard. President Trump claimed on Tuesday of this week that Canada is considering becoming the 51st state. I would bet on Alberta rather than Ontario, but it is a possibility. I know there were people, including me, who thought he may have been joking when he first brought up the possibility. Trump made the claim hours after King Charles III gave a thinly veiled rebuke of the U.S. president's attempt to annex Canada. It sounds like there are a lot of Canadians up there who don't want to be part of what Canada has become. And what did he say? I told Canada, which very much wants to be part of our fabulous Golden Dome system, which is going to cost $61 billion, that if they remain a separate but equal, unequal nation, it will cost $0 if they become our cherished 51st American state. And by the way, a new order issued by the Interior Secretary to ensure the natural and historical resources managed by the Interior Department accurately reflect American history and not partisan ideology. I can't wait for that to start happening. Glad to have you with me. Always glad to take your calls, and we'll get to those calls in just a moment. Coming up, is America's reliance on military stockpiles putting our security at extreme risk. That's next on the Lars Larson Show.
Does Lars finally agree with Chuck Schumer?
Of course there's some wasteful spending, but you don't use a meat axe and cut everything.
Pass out the chainsaws and welcome back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. I have a feeling we're going to be talking a lot during the 4 years of Donald Trump, God bless him, about the fact that America needs to become dependent not on foreign countries, but on the things we produce in our own country. That seems like common sense. And we can't just rely on short-term stockpiles. We got to boost our factories and the fact that we have to get minerals and raw materials out of the ground and make it ourselves right here. Brett Boyd joins me now, who's CEO of the company called Sustainment, which is focused on improving American manufacturing. Brett, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Lars. It's good to be with you.
Do we have a strategic problem like you wrote about in National Review?
Oh, we absolutely do. And this is actually a problem that has been building for years, actually for decades. But it's a problem that we have really seen in recent years as we've seen what's happened in Ukraine, what's happened in COVID, and what's happened with our attempts to resupply all the munitions used in and around Israel. We have a significant problem in our ability to build the things that we need to sustain our country in both peacetime and in wartime.
Okay, so two pieces of that. One is making the stuff, but the second one that comes before number two is getting the materials to actually make it. And as I understand it, we don't even produce most of the raw materials we need to grow food, let alone, which is why we've become a net food importer. How do we go about solving both of those? And if you want to just focus on manufacturing, because that's in your lane, I'm happy to let you do that.
No, absolutely. And it's a very interconnected problem, Lars. And look, as you know, and I've listened to you talk about this previously, this allowance of the country to have all of these manufacturing, all of the raw material production, and all of these critical things happen and move overseas over the past 25 years is a huge problem for us right now. So as we look in 2025, we have like flashing red lights all across the board. So we struggle with pharmaceutical subcomponents. We struggle with food. We struggle with electronic subcomponents, especially down in kind of the small chips that feed all of the electronic devices in our lives. Like the list goes on and on and on. And the U.S. has gone from being obviously an industrial powerhouse that essentially controlled our own destiny to being very, very dependent upon other countries for the things that we need all the time. And go ahead.
No, I want you to finish.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, like, and we're exposed in this, right? So in a world where, you know, maybe in the late 90s, you've got a China that's ascending, it's a growing economy, it's viewed as very harmless, we could look at this in one way, like, great, we have better share price returns, more efficient economy, et cetera, but in a world where we're, like, in strong competition with China and that they've essentially won the manufacturing war, like, it's very, very different. It's a significant problem for the country.
So how do we go about doing this? Because, Brett, I'll tell you, I have a bias against government mandates and against government subsidies. But I suspect there's a way to get this done without having the government come in. Because, for example, you know, people, and especially conservatives like my audience, will say, well, we should have a Buy American requirement under law. And I said, well, I can tell you a crazy story about shipping Portland cement, the stuff they make concrete out of, all the way to Afghanistan because of a Buy American law. And you say, why would you ship cement by air, believe it or not, by DHL, all the way to Afghanistan? Because somebody wrote a rule that said, if you're going to build these facilities in Afghanistan, when we had a presence there, you have to build them with American materials. So we're going to ship cement around the planet by air. Now, that's the stupid end of that. Is there a way to get there without having to set up rules that produce bizarre results like that?
Yeah, Lars, we are very aligned philosophically on this. And really what I think the heart of the issue is that we need to unleash the American entrepreneurs that really are the heart and soul of our economy. When you look at manufacturing in the United States, there are about 250,000 businesses in manufacturing. Just under 99% of those companies are categorized as small businesses, according to the federal government. They're small in terms of having fewer than 500 employees. So manufacturing employs about 13 million men and women, and just over two-thirds of those work in the small business segment in the manufacturing economy. So when we're really talking about manufacturing, we are talking about thousands and thousands of entrepreneurial small businesses spread throughout the country. And this is the asset that we need to unlock. The solution for our country is not over-regulation. It's not to try to copy China with these giant vertically integrated factories that are as big as cities. It is to deregulate and create a structure where these small businesses can be excellent and they can be more easily accessed. They can be more competitive with their international competition. And that's really the heart of how we see this manufacturing and industrial renaissance happening in the United States.
Well, for example, when it comes to things like rare earths, that's the key components that go into the circuits, the chips that make all these things run, from, you know, your cell phone to your car and everything else. How do we do that if an American, and there are some American companies that are mining those things here, but they typically ship them somewhere else because, number one, nobody has the equipment or the process to purify those things and make them ready to be put into chips. That's problem number one. And problem number two, it's slightly more expensive. But is there a way to get American companies to say, we're going to have our own internal bias of buying things that are produced in America, the materials, and producing them in America? I mean, there are a lot of chips that are made in America by primarily a few big companies, but 90% of the chips worldwide come from somewhere outside the United States. How do we get American companies to say, even if we got to pay a little bit more, we're going to make it clear to our customers, it's going to cost you a little bit more, but we're going to do it from American materials and American manufacturing?
Well, look, here's how this goes. And it's important to understand how we got where we've got and what the playing field looks like. Because the punchline is we need to level the playing field. But I think it's actually helpful to talk through how we got where we are.
Yeah.
And for me, this runs through China. China has been very sophisticated in essentially investing government capital into Chinese state-owned enterprises that allow them to compete around the world at below market prices. So you can see this in chips, you can see this in drones, you can see this in pharmaceuticals, you can see this in rare earth. So what's been happening over the past 25 years is you've actually had these Chinese businesses able to undercut the whole rest of the world because they're benefiting from Chinese state sponsorship. You have American competitors on the other side of the world that do not have that same level of state sponsorship. And so they have not been able to, you know, offer the same prices. And market dynamics have worked in such without any controls that everybody has bought from Chinese companies, which means all of the economies of scale and all of the benefits of having that scale and that growth have gone to the Chinese manufacturers. And this is how we get to a world where, you know, 90%+ of small drones are built in China, you know, pharmaceuticals, rare earths, chips, as you mentioned. This is how we got where we are. And I think that framing is incredibly important to keep in your mind as you think about, like, how do we fix this? Like this, it took 25 years to get where we are. And it is going to take time to pull out of this thing, but there will need to be a mix of Buy America initiatives, but there also will need to be protective measures so that our companies can compete on a level playing field with these international competitors. And, you know, we can argue over the implementation of tariffs and, you know, what percentages are right for what countries, but this is part of the overall policy toolkit to try to address this. And it's a huge problem that we deeply need to address.
And I think Americans will support it, Mr. Boyd. A number of years ago, there was a company I talked to, a small company that wanted to build houses where everything in the house was made in America. And they said the biggest problem they ran into was sheetrock screws because they were almost all made in China. And the ones made in America cost a gigantic amount of money because, as you said, they didn't have the economies of scale. China was selling 1 billion sheetrock screws, and the American company was probably selling 1 million instead. And yet the overall cost of the house, maybe 5% more if you built it all made in America. That is Brett Boyd, who is CEO of the company called Sustainment, focused on improving American manufacturing. When we get back, I'll get to your phone calls and emails. And should Americans' retirement savings be tied to Wall Street's woke agenda? That's next.
The Lars Larson Show. to listen to an interview again? Check out LarsLarson.com.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. Well, Joe Biden tried to tie your retirement to Wall Street's woke agenda, and now Donald Trump is doing his best to cut it loose. Should your 401k be forced to fund ESG activism, that's environmental and social governance? The Trump administration, according to Bloomberg Law, is going to replace a Biden-era rule that permits companies to sponsor workplace 401ks to consider eco-friendly factors when picking and choosing investments on behalf of workers and retirees. Ordinarily, if you've got a 401k, the people who manage that, their job is to get you the greatest amount of return that you can legally obtain, not to pay attention to the ecology. Lawyers for the government filed a status report yesterday that tells the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit it will engage in rulemaking that is set to appear on the U.S. Labor Department's spring agenda. Biden's pro-ESG retirement investing rule overturned a pair of regulations that Donald Trump set up during his first term that discouraged plans from employing ulterior motives when investing on behalf of plan participants. So if you want your money invested so you have the best possible retirement, you go with what is legal and what is high return. If you go with Joe, well, it's going to be ESG all day long. Glad to have you with me. Glad to take your calls too. Let me start with Chris. Chris heard my commentary about the shooting last night in downtown Seattle, stopped by a good guy with a gun. Chris, what's on your mind?
Hi, Lars. I've been listening to your show while picking up kids for the last several years.
Thank you.
And I heard your comment about police being minutes away when seconds count, and I couldn't agree with you more, especially after our family experienced a life-threatening incident about 9 months ago.
Yeah.
I have five boys ranging from, at the time, 18 to 9 years old. And one of my sons had a gentleman come over. He was 18. We've been familiar with him. He had been in the house. Very nice kid most of the time, but unfortunately on this event, he decided to engage in vaping of some sort. We never did get to the bottom exactly what it was. And after getting out of the shower, I came out to expecting to just tell a bunch of kids, calm down, go to bed. It was kind of late. And instead, I was confronted with this guest, 18 years old, about 230 pounds, 240 pounds. I'm about the same weight, 6'2", 6'3". And he was falling down the stairs backwards in the dark, popped up off the ground immediately, looked at me, said, "I'm going to kill everybody in this house," and then proceeded to run up the stairs towards my kid's room.
Wow.
And I yelled to my wife, "Call the police." And went upstairs, and then that's when I was engaged in a hand-to-hand, life-and-death fight in front of my 16-year-old son that was in shock. And after witnessing this individual attack, my 12-year-old son, who both were just playing video games, winding down for the night in their bedroom.
Sure.
And in the process of this, the reason I called is because, in regards to the comment I started out with about minutes and seconds, from the time my wife called 911 to the time they actually showed up was 22 minutes.
Wow.
That I had to subdue this individual who was high on something, obviously, had attacked my son, and apparently before I even knew about it, had attacked two of my other kids, which is what the ruckus was before I came out of the bedroom. The importance of concealed carry in California, especially since there's such a large population of undocumented in the state that we know nothing about, and the homeless, that we can't take our kids to school without seeing homeless on every street, even in a small town like Chico.
And too many of them are probably addicted to drugs or alcohol or both,
absolutely.
And mentally ill, perhaps
absolutely.
Because of that. So you've got real threats around you that shouldn't be there at all.
Yeah, and Democrats are always talking about wanting to address root causes, but they don't seem to have any interest in addressing the root cause of mental illness which is one of the biggest issues. I spent 10 years as a paramedic after 4 years of getting out of the Marine Corps in the infantry. I was not a combat veteran. And now when this incident occurred, I was actually in nursing school at the time. And I'm now a nurse in the area. I've dealt with this stuff, these people, throughout my entire career for more than 20 years. And if they really cared about their society, if Gavin Newsom really cared about the people in California, which I truly, deep down, after watching him as long as I have no faith that he cares about any of us. He cares strictly about power, money, and himself.
Well, otherwise, and you and I both know that Gavin Newsom is protected by men with guns. He's got a security detail,
he assumes the
rest of us have to be basically on our own. Chris, thanks for your service in the Marines, and I appreciate your call. Let's go to Joy. Hey, Joy, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
I just would like to say that I feel that a lot of what Trump is doing actually benefits China and not hurts China.
Tell me how.
Well, he's taking millions of dollars from Chinese born investors with his cryptocurrency like Justin Sun. He supports and markets the Tesla, which has the biggest factory in China. He is imposing
which
these
produces most, and by the way, Joy, we've checked that one before. Most of the Teslas produced in China are for sale in China. And most of the Teslas,
they're picking up a lot of Tesla technology and engineering. Many of his high tariffs on our friends are making them turn to China as a source of goods. And many of, I know you all want to poo-poo USAID, but places where the United States was a benefit to African, South American, other countries where people would be supporting the United States, they're leaving, they've got a gap, and China's coming in.
Joy, if those countries were friendly to the U.S. because we were giving them money, do you know what I think is probably true? When you have to buy your friends are not going to be very dependable at all. But, Joy, I appreciate the phone call. Interesting theory. I don't think it's right. And I think USAID was a giant money laundry for the DNC. Planned Parenthood CEO compensation, you know, the organization that kills about 500,000 babies every year, paid its CEO almost $1 million last year. And part of that money was your tax dollars. Planned Parenthood is big abortion business, profiting off baby killing. We have to stop Planned Parenthood, and I've got the team to make it happen. Join me in supporting Americans United for Life. Since their beginnings in 1970, AUL has been involved in every pro-life case that's presented before the U.S. Supreme Court. Their top-tier lawyers defend life and protect the unborn. AUL played a critical role in overturning Roe, and now they're focused on exposing Planned Parenthood and closing those abortion centers permanently. AUL has helped save over 3 million children, and they're leading the charge in the post-Roe era. I'm looking for 50 pro-life listeners who will donate $50 a month to stop the madness. Your tax-deductible donation can be made securely at AUL.org/Lars. That's AUL.org/Lars. Americans United for Life.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now,
Lars. Real Red Meat Radio.
I mean, that's a special kind of stupid.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly, provocative talk radio.
What I say is what I say. And honestly, if you don't like it, I'm sorry.
Lars.
Oh, boys, I'm back.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Now, here's your host.
Wait a minute. I'm talking now, if you don't mind, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Would you believe this? Non-citizens who are going to be allowed to serve on election boards in California. Now, what's going on with this? Well, it turns out that the state legislature in California is considering the idea of allowing non-citizens to be involved in counting of ballots and recount boards during elections. I want to play a soundbite. It comes from Assemblymember Carl DeMeo. And he actually rose in Sacramento, even though Republicans are in the minority in the state legislature in California. And he expressed a concern about whether or not they were going to allow non-citizens to serve on those election boards, which includes the process of recounts and considering whether or not the election was done legally or not. And he raised a rather sensible objection.
Mr. Speaker, I rise in strong opposition to AB 930. It does not modernize the way people vote. It adds the ability for non-citizens to serve as recount board members. I'm not sure why a non-citizen should have any business serving on a board overseeing a U.S. election. That's not how people vote.
No, it's not how people vote. And in fact, this is part of the continuing push that I see to try to bring non-citizens into American elections even more than they are already. And they are. But let me get into that in just a moment. First, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. If you want to join what we call the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, we're going to put you right to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com, and you can vote in our poll on X. The X poll is put up every day from the news of the day. We try to write a fresh question every single day. You can vote any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. But the bill in California that is currently being debated in Sacramento would change the language of the law. And what it does, it allows non-citizens to be involved in counting the ballots and serve on the recount boards during elections. Now, you understand that in the last several years, there's been a heightened interest in this. I think there should have been interest in this a long, long time ago. Too many states out there have decided to allow non-citizens to vote. Washington, D.C. wanted to be able to allow non-citizens to vote in local elections. New York City tried it, and even New York City's Supreme Court, the New York State's Supreme Court, had ruled that that was illegal because it violated the Constitution of the state of New York. And there have been other efforts. San Francisco, at one point, wanted to allow non-citizens to vote in elections. They're trying to normalize the idea, and the argument goes this way. Well, if somebody is here in the country, whether they're here legally, a green card holder with a work permit, or somebody who's here illegally, they should be able to vote because they live here, they pay taxes, their kids go to schools here. That is the usual argument. And I don't buy it. Now, I understand there are some liberal lunatics out there who think, well, if you live in a community, even if you're there illegally, you should be able to vote on who's representing you in the state legislature, on the city council, on the county commission. You should be able to vote. If you're paying taxes, you should be able to vote. That's not what voting is about. And voting has never been available to non-citizens. The fact is, this country has a representative form of government. The Democrat Party always likes to say that we have a democracy. We do not have a democracy. We don't even vote directly for the president of the United States. The president is chosen by the Electoral College. Now, are citizens allowed to vote, and they're involved in that process because they vote for the representatives. The representatives then make the decisions that govern what's going on in that society. And the argument is that, well, if they're paying, if they're here, well, I could apply that argument to everybody who's a visitor to the United States, somebody who's here on a tourist visa, or somebody who's going to school at a college or a university in America, and say, well, if they're here, if they're paying the cost of being here, if they're paying the taxes, if they're working here, that they should be entitled to a vote. Well, non-citizens cannot vote in federal elections in California, although, as I mentioned, there are several local communities like San Francisco that have laws that allow non-citizens to vote on local elections. I don't think that makes sense either, because it suggests that citizenship in America doesn't really mean much anymore. All it means is you live here legally or not, you work here legally or not, and you should have a say. I don't think non-citizens should have a say at all, and I'd love to see that one put to a vote. Let me go to Corey, who's a naysayer. Hey, Corey, we love naysayers on this program, so thanks for calling. What do you and I disagree about today that makes you a naysayer?
I'm disagreeing about Trump giving that pardon to those reality show people.
Yeah, to the Chrisleys. What do you think that one makes sense?
It makes sense to Trump. It is the rotten fruit of too many political prosecutions that have been going on for the last decade or more. The daughter of the Chrisleys came out and said that she believed her parents had faced political prosecution. Now, I'm not disagreeing that what they did was criminal, but Trump himself has been the victim of some clearly political prosecution. And I'd point to a local case going here with Sean Kemp, a former basketball star.
Yeah.
He was robbed from his car, and he pulled his gun. Now, foolishly, he discharged a quote-unquote warning shot.
Which are illegal.
Robbed him, which are illegal. The people who robbed him were caught but not prosecuted. Sean Kemp, the victim of the crime, was threatened with decades in jail. So he recently agreed to sell for a couple of months in jail himself. But it's ridiculousness like this, where the prosecutors politically choose to charge a victim and will let violent criminals off. Now, I think Chrisleys shouldn't have been let out of jail, but I think Trump is very angry about the way he was politically targeted for prosecution. The same thing with these people who attempted to abduct the governor of Michigan, where it turns out most of them were FBI agents or confidential informants. And the two guys were basically sub-morons who got dragged into a political prosecution. And it seems a lot of these pardons he's issuing out, like some of these gang leaders, are what he believes to be political.
See, and that, Corey, I would agree with you that, say, the J6 prosecutions were crazy. But when it came to the Chrisleys, the thing I didn't understand was they borrowed the money and they lied on the documents to borrow the money. And it was not a small amount. It was tens of millions of dollars. And then cheating on their taxes by not declaring the income, not from the money that they borrowed or the money they made from that or the money they spent, but also not even apparently declaring the income on the money they made from the reality show. Can we sort out? I mean, I understand why Trump feels that way about being politically prosecuted. I think his prosecutions were political. But in the case of the Chrisleys, they just sound like plain old ordinary grifters who broke the law, cheated on their taxes, stole money, and got punished for it. And I just didn't for the life of me understand why Donald Trump would come to their defense. And not just that, but one of the Chrisleys, well, they both served about 2 years each out of sentences that were much longer. I certainly don't think that they deserve a pardon from the President of the United States. Corey, thanks for the call.
Provocative Talk Radio. Here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. Lots and lots of talk about tariffs, and it's like a ping pong ball that's been bouncing between the federal courts. One court says the president can impose tariffs. Another court says no, he can't. And then it goes back and forth and back and forth. But at the end of the day, are President Trump's tariffs some good news for the greenies out there? Melanie Collette joins me now, who's with the Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow. Melanie, welcome back to the program. How are you?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm well.
Now, if you disagree with anything I just said, I always invite people to feel free to disagree and tell me so. But tell me what's going on when it comes to tariffs and the way it intersects with the technology that liberal Democrats like to call renewable or sustainable energy.
They love to talk about it, and so they should also love to talk about how tariffs are beneficial to the green movement, shouldn't they? I think they should be super-duper happy about this.
Now, hold on, Melanie. You really think that liberal Democrats who love solar panels and windmills are going to come out and start singing the praises of Donald Trump?
Well, we know if nothing else, they're super consistent. So there's that. So you know that they are certainly going to praise the fact that solar panels and EV batteries and things like that usually come from heavily polluted nations like China. But thanks to Trump's tariffs, which often, you know, you look at as an economic tool, will serve unexpected, at least on their part, environmental benefits that I think the loony left should totally acknowledge. Domestic production is cleaner. We have more rules. We have an EPA. We're very strict when it comes to environmental oversight. They should be thrilled about that, that we have those environmental filters that will penalize products from countries that, that have these loose pollution standards. So I think they should be super happy about that.
Well, I think they should, too, Melanie. In fact, we save them. I realize that, and I always tell my audience that Democrats have to have double standards or they'd have no standards at all. But we're saving them from looking hypocritical when people say, so you're getting all this clean, green energy, the tools to make the clean, green energy from a place that isn't shy, China in this case, isn't shy about polluting its own air, polluting its water, and polluting whole sections of its country. And you say, yeah, we want to save you from that end because that's going to look really stupid when you say, we've got all this clean, green energy, and all we had to do is dirty up one very large country to make it happen.
Exactly. And, you know, in that country, like, they pollute their water, their air, everything is super polluted in the name of the green energy agenda. It really is, you know, all comedy aside, quite disgusting.
It is because, I mean, look, China is the kind of pollution problem that you can see from space, but is this going to be actually be embraced? And are we going to start seeing some companies? There are a few that make solar panels in North America, but not that many. But are we going to start seeing companies say, well, now that it's expensive to bring in solar panels from China or Malaysia or the other primary producers of them, we'll start making them in America instead?
I think if we could get these activist judges out of the way, that will start happening. But they seem to not really want the clean energy as much as they say they want the clean energy, nor do they want United States economic strength and viability and to be the dominating power throughout the planet that we always have been. They clearly don't want that either, or they leave the tariffs alone. It's just ridiculous what they're doing. But, you know, there's certainly more accountability, more transparency when it comes to producing these rare earth minerals, which is why I decided to write about that. Like you said in your open, the tariffs have been heavily in the news. And, you know, money in the environment pretty much touches everything. And I think it's important to examine the environmental aspects and how the Trump tariffs are going to help that.
Well, and in fact, you know, on things like lithium, that's a primary component of batteries, I ask a couple of experts on lithium because we have some great finds in North America, especially in the United States. In northern Nevada, there's a gigantic lithium find. And I said, why aren't we processing that stuff here? And they said, well, because even with all the technology, it really does require, you know, giant piles of waste. And I said, well, how do the Chinese handle it? And he said, well, effectively, they've just declared the section of their country, a big chunk of their country, you know, not big when you're China, because, you know, China is a very large country. They basically declared it a sacrifice zone. Say, we're going to do all the dirty stuff there. The way if I'm going to take apart something that's greasy, I take it out to the garage. I don't do it on the living room floor. And so my house still looks clean. And my wife is happy,
but
you know, you take the dirty work and you run it out into the garage. That's what the Chinese have done. They've just taken a chunk of their country and said, okay, that's the sacrifice zone.
Oh, gosh, it's disgusting. And there's no such thing. They do know that it's all connected, right? Like the earth, like it's all, it's connected. That's not, like, I'm not a scientific expert, but I do not think that that is the way that works.
I mean, eventually it's going to come back at you the same way some of our old stuff has come back at us. Hey, what happened to all those mill tailings from mining, you know, decades or half a century ago? And you say, well, they're still there and we're going to figure out what to do with them. But it's the same problem that we've got of where are all the old used windmill blades going, 20 or 30,000 of them every year. Go ahead.
They're looking into that. We're looking into that. Oh, so we're going to build them. And then we're going to find out where we're going to put the, like, this makes sense?
No.
Does this make sense at all?
You know, Melanie, every time I talk about this, I get a call from somebody who's an enthusiast for windmills. Or, I mean, everybody's got an idea, but nobody's got one that actually works and that you're willing to pay for.
Exactly. And in the meantime, you're using all these areas as guinea pigs. And I'm very sensitive about this topic because you may or may not know that I live in Cape May County, New Jersey, where I'm a county elected official. And they or
I didn't know that.
Yes.
What is your official elected title? I'm curious. I didn't know that about you, Melanie.
I'm a county commissioner. Well, that happened in 23. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm a county commissioner.
Well, congratulations.
And,
Thank you. And they tried to, first one of my kind, if you will. But
oh, no.
In the county's 340-year history. But
never had a black county commissioner?
That's a fact.
Wow.
Nope.
Okay.
Yeah,
they're,
I know.
They're getting with the times then, huh?
Listen, we're moving on up. Well, I'm most proud of the fact that we never said that once during my campaign, but I digress. Just never said it. But they, Orsted really did try to put wind turbines off our coast. And one of the things that I was saying when I was fighting against these wind turbines, put 15 miles off the coast of beautiful Cape May County, is that, hey, you're going to negatively affect businesses. And the effect on climate change is absolutely negligible. And our electricity bills are going to necessarily go up 30 to 40%. And because we are a resort area in Cape May County along the coast, 60% of our homes are second home owners, retirees, people on fixed incomes. How are they supposed to absorb a 30 to 40% increase in their electricity bills?
No, it doesn't make any sense. That's Melanie Collette, County Commissioner, and with the Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow. Melanie, thank you very much. By the way, just in, Planned Parenthood CEO compensation, you know, that organization that kills almost 500,000 babies every year, paid its CEO almost $1 million last year. And some of that money was taxpayer dollars that help fund it. Planned Parenthood is big abortion business that profits off baby killing. We have to stop Planned Parenthood, and I have just the team to make it happen. Join me in supporting Americans United for Life. Since their beginnings in 1970, AUL has been involved in every pro-life case presented before the Supreme Court. They're top-tier legal professionals are dedicated to defending life and protecting the unborn. AUL played a critical role in the legal strategy that contributed to overturning Roe, and now they're focused on exposing Planned Parenthood and closing those abortion centers permanently. Americans United for Life has helped save over 3 million kids. I'm looking for 50 pro-life listeners to donate $50 a month to stop this madness. Your tax-deductible donation saves the lives of babies and advances pro-life legislation nationwide. Your help is critical. Donate securely at AUL.org/Lars. That's AUL.org/Lars. Protect those lives and support Americans United for Life. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. Interviews with authors, experts, and a healthy dose of opinion. Find it at LarsLarson.com.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Always glad to get your phone calls and emails. And if you, like me, think that the federal court system is very, very screwed up, judges who are supposed to be insulated from politics because they get a lifetime appointment, they effectively have a job for life and very generous retirement, and then they decide to insert themselves into the political process by issuing decisions to try to cut off the decisions of the president of the United States. And I think a lot of them know that they're going to be overturned, but they know that in the meantime, they're throwing a monkey wrench into the gears. Well, if you think that's bad, then you should consider what's going on in the District of Columbia, the seat of our federal government. And Zach Smith has written about it. He's a legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation, co-author with Cully Stimson of a new book called Rogue Prosecutors, How Radical Soros Lawyers Are Destroying America's Community. Zach, welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me on the show this afternoon.
I had no idea that the District of Columbia court system was so screwed up, because the president is supposed to nominate candidates for that system, and yet somehow he gets cut out of the process almost entirely?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Lars. So I've previously written about the way candidates for D.C.'s, quote, local court system are made. It goes through a very bizarre process, a judicial nominating commission, where federal district court judges get to appoint their own fellow judges to sit on it, where the mayor gets to appoint members, where the city council gets to appoint members. And basically, this commission can restrict, allegedly, who the president can appoint to D.C.'s local courts. But wait, it actually gets worse than that, Lars, because judges on D.C.'s local courts are appointed for 15-year terms. Whenever they come to their end of their term, a different commission, the D.C. Commission on Judicial Disabilities and Tenure, can actually recertify a candidate to serve another 15-year term without the president ever getting a chance to weigh in on that nomination or appointment in any form or fashion. It's a terrible system. It's an unconstitutional system, and one that the president and Congress should step in and change.
Well, let me ask you this. Was this system grown out of rules written by the District of Columbia, or was it grown out of rules written by the U.S. Congress?
Well, it came out of the Home Rule Act that took place in the 1960s and 1970s when those discussions started happening, but it's morphed into really its own unique entity in a lot of ways. And look, Lars, I think everyone, even citizens of the District of Columbia, will look at this system and say that it's not working particularly well. And I'll give an example. One of the reasons it's not working very well is that Joe Biden, several years ago, nominated a current D.C. Superior Court judge, Judge Edelman, to serve on the federal district court in Washington, D.C. Now, Todd Edelman was so radical, he was so left-leaning, that Congress, the Senate at the time, refused to confirm his confirmation, and essentially his nomination died. Well, this Commission on Disabilities and Tenure, they just rated Todd Edelman well-qualified, said he's doing a great job on the D.C. Superior Court, and as a result, he automatically gets to serve another 15-year term without President Trump ever getting a chance to weigh in or appoint his own preferred candidate to serve on that very court.
Okay, now tell me this. I'm talking to Zach Smith, the author of Rogue Prosecutors. Is this part of what contributes to the District of Columbia's terrible crime rate? And the fact that they have almost out of control crime because they don't want to punish criminals?
100%, Lars. Look, unfortunately, the judges on D.C. Superior Court, by and large, have adopted very radical, very soft-on-crime policies. You see them setting inappropriately low bail, releasing offenders back into the community who should never be released when they're pending trial. They often give very light, very lenient sentences when people commit very violent crimes, things like rape, robbery, and murder. And so the issues occurring in D.C.'s local district Superior Court and Court of Appeals there, that is affecting the safety and security of everyone who lives, works, or conducts our nation's business in the district.
Okay, and Zach, there's constantly talk. I mean, it comes up, you know, periodically to turn D.C. into a state. I don't want to see D.C. turned into a state. I think we have to have a place where our federal government resides. And I think there are legal reasons why you don't want it to reside in one of the 50 states, although maybe you can tell me there's a good reason to go that way. But why doesn't Congress take control of this district and make it clear? Yes, you exist. Yes, you've got people who live in the city of D.C., but you're not going to get to act like your own entity. Is it time for Congress to take control of the whole shooting works?
Yeah, Congress absolutely needs to step in, particularly when it comes to crime and criminal justice issues in the district. Look, the framers of our Constitution, Lars, recognize exactly what you said, that our nation's capital should not be in any one state. It needed to be its own separate, distinct entity for a number of reasons. So Congress does need to step in and act. Now, when it comes to appointing judges to D.C.'s, quote, local court system, President Trump has several options. He can ask the Attorney General Pam Bondi to file a writ known as a quo warranto writ, basically get a declaration from a different court saying that the judges are improperly appointed. They cannot constitutionally exercise the authority they purport to act on. Or the president can simply refuse to appoint new members to this Commission on Judicial Tenure and Disability. And if there are not a sufficient number of members to this commission, then they wouldn't have a quorum, and the president could then presumably appoint his own preferred candidates.
Okay, so he wouldn't have to put new members on the commission. He just says, I'm going to starve you of members, and when you drop below a quorum, you're just going to show up at work every day, and there's going to be nothing for you to do because you don't have enough members to cast a vote.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And in fact, I think there's a very good argument to be made as well, Lars, particularly in light of several recent Supreme Court decisions, that the president could actually take it a step further. He could actually fire or remove many of the existing members of that commission who he did not appoint. You know, keep in mind, this same fight has been playing out with other so-called independent agencies, the Federal Trade Commission, the SEC, the CFTC. Take your pick of the alphabet soup agencies in Washington, where Congress allegedly said that the president cannot fire or hire his own preferred candidates for those positions. Well, that's clearly in conflict with Article 2 of the Constitution. The Supreme Court has recently said as much when it comes to certain of those supposed independent agencies. And so I think the president would be on firm footing to take a similar course of action here and fire many of the members who he himself did not appoint.
I'm talking to Zach Smith, who's the author, along with Cully Stimson, of Rogue Prosecutors. One thing I want to ask you while I've got your ear, do you at all understand the I think, the rather strange pardons and clemency orders that have been coming out this last week or so?
Well, the president has certainly made clear he is going to make pardons a focus of his administration. He has made clear that he is going to streamline the process. And so I suspect you see a different approach than many previous administrations have taken. So we'll have to wait and see. Ed Martin, the former U.S. attorney in the District of Columbia, is now the pardon attorney. He's saying he's taking a close look at many of these matters. And I suspect some of the pardons, some of the commutations that have come out are cases where maybe the president or a member of his administration feel that the individuals were targeted either because of their celebrity or their political affiliation or their political status or something of that nature. But that would really be the speculation behind some of those pardons.
That's the thing we've had to do, because I know that Trump talks about lots of things lots of times, gives lots of speeches, and I wish he'd give one in which he'd say, this is why I pardon Mr. Hoover, you know, to dump him back on Chicago or on Illinois because he can serve his 100 years there. That one seems a little tough to understand. And the Chrisleys, I don't understand that one at all, except for the fact that maybe they were targeted because of celebrity. But it seems to me if they cheated on their taxes and fraudulently got 20 or 30 million bucks, they probably deserve to go to jail. That's Zach Smith, the author of Rogue Prosecutor. Zach, thanks very much. Back in a moment. I'll get to your phone calls and emails. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Radio, the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I have been honest with you since the beginning, when Donald Trump came down that escalator and announced he would run for president. And when I decided to endorse him just a few months later, I said, look, I'm going to endorse him. I think he's the best choice. And he was. And he served a great term. And then he was out for 4 years. And then he ran again. And I supported him then. I support him still. But I also said there will be times when I disagree with President Trump, and when I do, I will say so out loud. So, what is the story with all the crazy pardons that are coming down from President Trump? We could probably argue about the J6 pardons, but I think the J6 incident, where you had a bunch of people who committed relatively minor crimes for the most part, the ones who committed serious crimes were in most cases either convicted or they pleaded out. But for the vast majority of those people who should have received, say, a ticket or a fine, that would have been fine, except the Biden regime decided to turn the process into the punishment by detaining so many of them for so long and holding them incommunicado. So that's not one I'm going to talk about now. I want to talk about the ones that have come about relatively recently. For example, yesterday, President Trump commuted the sentence of a drug kingpin who was serving 100-plus years for murder. I'm talking about Larry Hoover. He was serving 3 life terms for running a notorious Chicago drug gang, and he was running it out of his prison cell. The commutation is not expected to put him back on the streets. He still has 100 years left to serve on state murder charges in Illinois that presidential clemency does not erase. Presidents can pardon, but only for federal crimes, not for state crimes. But it may mean that he'll be transferred out of the Supermax prison in Colorado, where he's being held right now. Now, he had already been locked away in Illinois since the 70s for the murder of a rival drug dealer. And for the life of me, I cannot find an explanation as to why Donald Trump, President Trump, would pardon this guy or give him clemency on the federal charges. It doesn't make sense to me. One that makes a bit of sense, although not a lot, is the attempted kidnapping of the Michigan governor, Gretchen Whitmer. Well, the FBI pushed that thing. It seemed more like a sting or a setup to most of us. But President Trump said yesterday that he's considering pardons for some of the men who were caught up in that. And here's the argument. 14 men were originally charged in that plot to kidnap Whitmer back in 2020. Most of them were acquitted in the trial that was held. Two of them were convicted. But the FBI was, and the FBI, which is a corrupt organization, under new management, but still a corrupt organization, they were involved in that plot. They effectively set it up and persuaded people to take part in that plot. It seemed more like a, not a sting, but a setup, and it didn't seem right. So now he's considering a pardon there. That one at least makes some sense. But then comes the reality stars. I'm talking about Todd and Julie Chrisley. Now, this pair did some really terrible things. Most of them were financial, as opposed to running a drug gang or something like that. But they got pardons. Now, here's the thing that floors me on this, because I don't understand why he did it, nor can I find anybody who can offer me a sensible explanation. So what did the Chrisleys do? They had a reality TV show. They were making a lot of money on that, and they didn't pay their taxes. They also took out about $30 million in fraudulent loans, and they got convicted of that. Now, they claim that they were being, you know, politically persecuted and, pursued because they were conservatives. They got sentences for tax evasion and fraud that totaled 12 years and 7 years for Todd and Julie Chrisley. Now, Todd Chrisley went to prison about 2 years ago. He's only served 2 years. What did they do? Well, they defrauded banks out of about $30 million. Then they filed for bankruptcy, and they evaded paying taxes on all that. I think that's pretty serious. The sentences don't sound outrageous. At 12 years and 7 years, Todd Chrisley declared bankruptcy and left $20-plus million in unpaid loans. When the banks have costs like that, they end up paying those costs, and they pay them by the business they do with the rest of us. So when you see somebody rip off a bank and you think, well, that's a victimless crime. No, because the bank is going to lose the money. In some cases, it's covered by insurance and their premiums go up and we pay their premiums. Or they lose the money altogether and then consumers pay more. It doesn't make any sense. And for the life of me, I don't understand why President Trump would decide to pardon them, but that's the way it is and they're getting out of prison. And then, how about this? This is one I could agree with. And President Trump has pardoned a former Army officer who was convicted by a military court-martial for refusing to take the jab. He was told to take the mRNA COVID-19 jab that never was a vaccine, still does not behave like a vaccine. Remember all the lies we were told by people like Joe Biden? If you get the vaccine, you can't catch COVID. Not true. If you get the vaccine and you catch COVID, you won't get seriously ill and go to the hospital. Not true. If you get the vaccine and you catch COVID, you won't die. Also not true. So, who got pardoned? Lieutenant Mark Bashaw. Bashaw said, I'm not going to take a test for coronavirus before going back to the office. I will not wear a face mask indoors. The Pentagon had required all that nonsense. And they did a terrible disservice to people in uniform, and yet that's exactly what they did. So now President Trump has issued a pardon. Some of the other pardons, he issued a pardon for a former Virginia sheriff by the name of Scott Jenkins. A jury had convicted Jenkins on federal fraud and bribery charges. That only happened last year. Well, President Trump said that he and his family, Jenkins and his family, had been dragged through hell by a corrupt and weaponized Biden DOJ. Well, question is, I understand President Trump was pursued by a weaponized DOJ under Joe Biden, but in this case, if the sheriff was convicted of fraud and bribery, the sheriff should serve his time. At least that's my take on it, and I don't see any reason to take a different take. Hey, if something were to happen tomorrow, are you ready for it? A new virus, or maybe a shortage, a supply chain collapse. Whatever it is, your health cannot wait. And that's exactly why I want to tell you about All Family Pharmacy. It's a pharmacy that puts you in number one spot. They're on a mission to make America healthy again, helping families like yours stay stocked up and ready with the medications they need close at hand. They're not just selling medication, they're standing up for medical freedom and making sure Americans have access to the treatments they choose. While others are blocking access, All Family Pharmacy makes it available. They've got ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, methylene blue, mebendazole, antibiotics, even everyday meds, 200 medications available. And it's easy. No insurance, no hassle. Just go online, work with a licensed doctor who handles the prescription. The meds ship right to your front door. If you'd rather be stocked up than caught off guard, this is the option for you. Go to allfamilypharmacy.com/Lars and use my code Lars10 for 10% off. That's allfamilypharmacy.com/Lars and code Lars10. Take control of your health.
The Lars Larson Show.